Welcome to the Generous Business Owner Podcast, where business owners gain inspiration and encouragement to live a legacy, not just leave one. And now your hosts, Jeff Thomas, Alan Barnhart, and Jeff Rutt.
Welcome, everybody, to this week's Generous Business Owner Podcast. My name is Jeff Thomas, and I've got my co-host, Jeff Rutt, with me today. Say hello to the people, Jeff.
Hello to the people.
Hello to the people, and power to the people, whatever that means. We have a special guest with us this week, Dan Devine. And Dan is, he was really the co-founder of the Compass Knowledge Group that he sold nearly a decade ago. So we got to get to see the after story of maybe a little halftime story. He's involved in all kinds of nonprofit activities that he'll tell us all about. But Dan, thanks for being with us today.
Yeah, no, I appreciate the opportunity to spend time with you all.
It's going to be great to get your story. Jeff, why don't you kick us off?
Yeah, Dan, thanks for being here. Tell us a little bit about the early years of Dan. What was it like in the household, spiritual formation, entrepreneurial mindset early on? We found that a lot of our guests did something illegal in sales in their early years, but not trying to set the table there, but tell us about the early years of Dan.
Yeah, so that's, I think we all have those early stories. So especially as an entrepreneur, usually that starts pretty young in age. So yeah, I was the oldest of five. I grew up in Central Florida. I had entrepreneurial parents. So that was, you know, was very helpful at a very young age. They had rental properties and I was in there, you know, cleaning out units after people. That was very enlightening. My father was an optometrist and he built an optical lab in my bedroom. And so in the ninth grade, when I don't know, when I was 14 or years old or whatnot, he'd bring home lenses and he taught me how to cut those lenses and he'd pay me $1 a pair. And I would do 10 pair a day, a couple days a week. So that was the way we got started with
that. That sounds illegal.
Yeah,
that sounds illegal. That sounds like child labor in his bedroom. That was prescient of you.
Let me tell you what, though, at that age, this a long time ago, I was feeling that was a lot of money. It was tax free.
Yeah,
I learned that early on.
It's not like an early MBA. Yeah. That's awesome.
Yeah, yeah. So anyway, I had entrepreneurial parents and just had a great childhood. Honestly, I was really, really blessed to have the parents I had. And went to University of Florida and got an electrical engineering degree and then went and worked for a company called Harris Corporation, large aerospace defense business, and started out, you know, kind of thinking that, you know, this is going to be the greatest thing since sliced bread. And so I had a nice job, nice starting salary as an engineer for Harris Corporation. I did that for about 2 or 3 years. And then I had the very good fortune to get in their executive development program at Harris. And they take about, at the time, they had about 3,000 employees and they take about 5 people every other year. And it was quite an honor to get in that. A lot of education the first year. And second year, you're out in the field. You're with the lobbyists at, you know, up on Capitol Hill and you're the Pentagon and all. So it was a great experience. And it, from all external appearances, it looked like I was like going to the moon in the corporate world. But underneath, I was not happy, fairly dissatisfied with that. I was married and had children, but I had seen some things in the corporate world which I didn't really like. And there was a couple of things. One was it wasn't necessarily output that led to success in some of those environments, number one. Number two, I saw a lot of men that I admired who were kind of between the age of 45 and 55. And in the late 80s, there was a little bit of a downturn in the defense business and those guys were out of a job and they had kids and everything else. And I was thinking, I don't really like, I'm kind of a control guy. So I was like, I don't really like that. And then the third issue I was having was I was so far removed from who I was serving. I just was having a difficult, I was struggling. And so I can remember very clearly, it was a hot morning in August of 1992. I had a wife with 2 young children and she was pregnant with our third and I couldn't get out of bed. And I was like, wow, this is not good. I could not get out of bed. And it was at that dark, dark time in my life, I had this really kind of like mind-blowing thought. And that thought was that when I was in high school working in this really hot, kind of difficult pizza restaurant, making pizzas, and it was a grind of a job. It was like all night long. It was a horrible, I wouldn't say it was horrible. It was a very challenging job. I realized I had a thought that that job was more meaningful to me and more fulfilling than this like high profile corporate job where everyone thought that like, you know, Dan's on the way to be CEO. He's making good money. He's got a lot of opportunity. And it knocked me over. Literally, just I couldn't understand how I could think about that job, you know, that really difficult job and this like supposedly glamorous job, how I could weigh one higher than the other. So the outcome of that, though, was I just realized for me, when I was making those pizzas, and there again, I'm a perfectionist. So those pizzas came out, they were round. They had the perfect number of the amount of cheese and pepperonis and everything. It looked good. It tasted good. I made a really good pizza. In fact, I just made them for my kids this last weekend. I still make really good pizzas. You can ask them. So, but long story short, the pizza counter was behind the cash register. So I'd make these pizzas. People would come to pay and they would yell back like, man, that was an unbelievable pizza. And so what the lesson for me was, I have to be connected to who I'm serving. Mm. And the biggest issue I think I had at that time was I was so far removed from the people I was serving and the
customer.
U.S. Air Force or the Navy or whatnot. There was just a huge disconnect that wasn't working for me. And I knew at that moment I had to go do something different. But it was really, really difficult. A lot of pressure. My poor wife, who just,
she's like, I like the corporate job for you.
Yeah.
I don't know what's wrong. Yeah. You know,
every other Thursday we got paid. We had insurance. We had all of this
stuff.
But I have to really hand it to her. I mean, she never wavered. She really, there were scary times. She never wavered. So I just entered a process. Obviously, I kept that job, but I entered a process of a lot of exploratory kinds of things. So I met with, you know, folks like yourselves. I networked. I just did a lot of exploring of different folks. And I'll be honest, at that point in time, I was raised Catholic, and I didn't really know to pray for very specific things. Mm. I was not taught that. And so I'll be honest, at the time, I did not pray that specifically. I prayed, but I wasn't very specific in my prayer. So I feel very blessed by the good Lord because you can see his hand in that now as I look back. So I went on this exploratory kind of journey. And then finally, I took the leap and left Harris Corporation. I had a good enough relationship with them that they hired me back as a consultant. So I made almost about the same amount of money, but worked half the time and allowed me to go and do a number of different things. So I was very blessed in that regard. There again, very difficult, you know, to make kind of do that jump from feeling secure into something completely insecure. So, but started a couple little businesses. And then the one that stuck was we had a distance learning company. It was focused on educating primarily nurses. And remember, this is before the internet. So we were doing distance learning the hard way. We were mailing, you know, videotapes and materials and all that. So we started, as Malcolm Gladwell likes to talk, your 10,000 hours. So we had 10,000 hours of learning on how to work through distance learning before the internet. And then the internet opened up in the late 90s. And I could tell all kinds of stories about that. But long story short, we took that little business. It was two of us that started. And 93, and then my partner left about halfway through, and then that business went on to 2012, basically. And we exited. We did a merger, and then we exited in 2012. And at the time, we had 640 employees serving 42 universities across the country, serving 16,000 students, doing degree programs from anywhere from bachelor's all the way to doctorate degrees.
Wow, you were way ahead of your time in that. I mean,
wow.
I'm sitting here thinking about during that 20-year period, right, when you were involved in that business.
Yes.
I'm thinking, when did Blockbuster go down?
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I mean,
you sort of made the, you know what I mean? The mailing, you know, remember Netflix used to mail the CDs?
Yeah, he used to mail and all that.
Blockbuster's like, hey, come in and get the VHS.
It was interesting because my last assignment at Harris Corporation was the precursor to emails called the Defense Messaging System.
Oh, yeah.
So I had a lot of, I certainly would never claim that we invented online education, just like some claim they invented internet.
No,
didn't do any of that. But we just had the fortune to have the foresight to see kind of where things were going.
You saw the digital coming.
That's right. And our expertise is working with colleges and universities and taking that risk away from them. So we did all the logistics support and helped them in that transition. And it was one of those businesses. Our timing was really, really good, very fortuitous. We never wanted for new business. Our challenge was always not taking too much business.
Wow.
And we grew that business and it had a very, very fortuitous, successful exit. And God blessed me with more than, 10 times more than I'd ever even dreamt of through that. And in that business, though, I'll just back up a little bit. We ran that business. It was more like a family kind of run business. And, every new employee I would sit down with on their first day, typically a Monday, spend 20 or 30 minutes with them. And I was always amazed. I wanted them to get to know who I was as a person, and I wanted to know who they were. But I was always so shocked by how many of them, it's usually about a third of them, had such poor professional experiences. And it really created almost like a sadness in my heart. And so we worked really, really hard to just make a very good work environment, but productive. And then it evolved into a kingdom platform for me. And it was largely based off, I read the book Halftime. I think it was in the mid, I don't remember what year that book came out, but it was right when that book came out, that book was given to me. Of course, at that time I was in my 30s, but it was very instrumental to me in the way that I read that book. And I was like, why would I wait to start thinking and applying those kinds of principles? Why would I wait until I was like retired or whatnot? And so we kind of took those types of principles and started to move in that direction, I would say probably in the mid to later 90s.
So a small commercial break here. We're going to put that in the show notes, Halftime Institute, and put the link to the book Halftime in the show notes if you want more information. But yeah, a lot of us have read and been influenced by that whole movement. Why wait?
That's right. Yeah, why wait till you're 50 or 60 to start doing kingdom work?
Exactly.
Dan, how did that manifest itself in the business? I mean, you gave people maybe a better environment. What are other ways that?
Well, we were folk. I think a couple of things. One was working just on the fundamentals of the business to create a positive work environment. Of course, you have to perform. So it doesn't mean you have a non-performing environment. We ran that business like a Formula One kind of race team. We were very precise, measured a lot and whatnot. But we tried really hard to hire really well to really help people develop and grow. I would say that was one part. I would typically, every month, and then it became as we grew, the frequency, it was a little bit harder to feed everybody. So in the early days, we'd have once a month, all hands, we'd do lunch. We'd always pray before lunch. And I just took a philosophy of trying to example, Christian life. And but I will tell you, I never tried to, like, it was not mandated or forced. It was just exampled. And so we would pray. And then it got to the point, could only do that once a quarter. But all the way up until my exit as a controlling shareholder, we prayed, before our meals. I also would underwrite, and no one knew this, but I would underwrite a Bible study. So that's another thing that they'd have weekly Bible studies, I would pay for snacks and all that stuff. But I didn't say, hey, Dan's paying for this. We had an outside guy, a Christian leader that I'd met here locally, and he came in. So we did things like that. And so,
good deal. What was the biggest setback in that 20 years? I mean, you got 02, all right, you're out of the tech rack, but you got 08 in there. I don't want to lead the witness, but what was the big setback you had in the business?
We don't have enough time to talk about
it. Okay. All right.
It's so funny. I was blessed with winning the Ernst & Young Entrepreneur Award. Yeah. And so after that, I was literally like just standing right after I'd gotten that award. And someone came up and asked me what it was like to be an overnight success. And I was just like, where did you get any idea that there was anything overnight about this? So, it was like a 20-year run, and I'd say 16 of those years were really challenging. And there were times where, I couldn't pay myself. There was a 2-year period where I literally took almost no money out of that business. We kept the business going. There were challenges, but we just worked our way through them and just kept at it. I don't give up easily. So just kept grinding away. And we were just super blessed with an abundance of opportunity in that business. And the timing of it was all very good.
Okay, so the exit happens. You've already read Halftime. So you already had that mentality. A lot of people are given that book during the exit. You know what I mean? Now what? Yeah. But luckily, you'd already read it before. But tell us about that transition. We work with a lot of people that are having that transition, and it is very difficult for a lot of people. So
yeah, well, let me tell you what, for you. I was fairly well prepared. It was difficult for me. So, you know, you spend 20 years, you identify with the business, you're getting a lot of recognition, you get your picture in the paper, and people know you and whatnot. And then
nobody's giving you the Ernst & Young Entrepreneur of the Year Award when you don't have a company to run.
That's right. That's right. Although in a second, I'll tell you about my goal for a second award from those guys. So at any rate, I was fairly well prepared. The part that I wasn't prepared for was, and I thought I was, but the absence of a platform. So you go, I ask a lot of questions. I get frustrated fairly easily if I'm not moving very quickly. And so when you have an organization the size that we had, I could go in every day, I'd have questions and I would have answers. And so, you know, you go from, 640 employees to myself pretty much, and maybe an assistant. That was a big shift. The other thing was I had kind of developed what I called lily pads, which were like, things I thought that I would jump to and kind of continue with. Well, when the fire came in, they bought literally everything. So there was nothing other than me. They bought everything around me. So that was, I in hindsight, I should have thought that through a little bit. But at the time I was in that transition, I went through the Halftime program. They have like a two-day seminar out in Dallas. So I went out and did that. And then there's one of the best in the world at these kinds of things is a guy named Lloyd Reeb. So Lloyd was my coach, and I had him coach me for a couple of years. And so he helped me through that transition. And so, I would say, and in fact, I re-enrolled. This is where Jeff and I saw each other in Chicago a couple of months ago. I re-enrolled kind of a 10-year tune-up with Lloyd, what they call the 100X program. And just with my thought being, I sort of had a decade post-sale, and now we're running into my second decade. It was actually at the encouragement of my wife to sort of re-engage with Lloyd and just kind of get ourselves, reset. I had a decade of sort of my Halftime experience, and it was time to kind of reflect and tune that up and sort of work our way through that.
I mean, Halftime takes you through an exercise where you define your calling.
That's correct.
Can you orate that for us?
Yes. Yes. I scale kingdom enterprises.
Hmm.
So that's a lot of what, in fact, I pulled, you can't really see it, but I have, my worksheet that you come up with that. And I had a fairly lengthy mission statement that I had a hard time memorizing. I always kind of knew it, but I was just like, what the heck, in a very short couple of words can I come up with to say to kind of keep me focused? Because a lot of people are always asking, like, what do? You retired, don't like that at all. But so scale kingdom enterprises. So what that means is you think about each one of those words, they're very meaningful. So scale doesn't mean start. And scale does not mean maintain. So my expertise is taking organizations that have something that's ongoing and then just really helping them to expand. And I'll give you an example here in a minute. Of course, kingdom is obvious. I've got to have a kingdom purpose. And then enterprises, it's an organized, ongoing, functioning organization. So that is what I'm good at, is taking the raw material of an enterprise, helping them organize, helping them hire, helping them with accountability, and helping them grow.
Cool. And so how are you applying that these days?
Yeah, so the most notable example was, I'll back up a little bit. When I sold my business, my mother, who's very, very influential in my life and a very fine example of living kind of a kingdom focused life. She said, Dan, I want you to do two things. She says, I want you to run for politics. We need competent politicians. I said, Mom, not going to happen. I've been a couple of those meetings. That's not for me. And then she said, secondly, she had actually gone blind late in life And she was involved in an organization called Lighthouse Central Florida. And she said, she called me Danny. She said, Danny, they need help over there desperately. And I would really appreciate it if you would just go over and just go in and try to help them. And so that started I think it's a 12 or 13 year journey with that organization. And one of the things they were having problems with is they just never have enough funding. And Lighthouse is here in Central Florida, it serves the needs of the blind and provides services. Well, they're always struggling for funding and whatnot. So we started a social enterprise to employ the blind. So if you're visually impaired, there's a 75% or so rate of under or unemployment in the that community. And so we started an enterprise, and it started out as kind of a light manufacturing, pack and ship kind of organization. But then based on my experience in the education business of call centers and whatnot, we opened up a call center component. So we've been at it now for quite a few years, so probably a bit over a decade where we've really been formally working on that. But we peaked last year at 600, a little bit over 600 employees. We've come back a little bit, but we've got over 500 employees, more than half of them are visually impaired. And that's an example of just taking those principles and those things that I learned in those 20 years of running that business and applying it into that organization. The thing I like to highlight, because I think a lot of people just assume you it takes like a lot of money to make a big kingdom impact. I actually haven't given that organization that much money. I've given them a lot of time and talent, but we've created a very valuable enterprise. My goal, and everyone thought I was crazy, but about 10 years ago, I said, I want to build an enterprise that not only employs the visually impaired, but also creates $1 million of redeployable money that we can put back into the local unit. And sure enough, last year we were able to do that.
Wow. That is a big goal. Congratulations. That's huge.
Yeah, and it's just, you know, Jim Collins, the big, hairy, audacious goals. I'm always big into that. And so now the big, hairy, audacious goal is let's go figure out how to expand that organization. And we want, you know, build it to 5,000 employees. We currently have employees in 22 states. We're incorporating in other states around the country. And basically just, I want to be the employer of choice for anyone who's visually impaired in our country. And then eventually we're actually, you know, flirting a little bit with some of these organizations overseas. As many of you all have traveled, you go to China, you go to India, many of these manufacturing environments, they're very hazardous. There's a lot of disability that comes out of that. I'm getting ahead of myself. The next goal is let's just keep growing this business to the point where we can employ anyone who really wants to be employed who's visually impaired. So that would be an example. That's an example of obviously a lot of work, but huge outcomes. The other thing, so my mom said politics, nope. She said, go do Lighthouse. Yep. I honored her in that.
Yeah, that's true.
I felt the third thing I really focus on, I felt a calling to, you know, with the mobile phone, similar to what I'd done in education, was to figure out how to educate the economically disadvantaged around the world. And I had been on the board of a Hope affiliate called Esperanza in the Dominican Republic. And so I had tried to work through Esperanza on this, but we couldn't quite get it going. So I started my own organization down in the DR called Move Up. We had about 5 employees, and we gave it about a 5 or 6 year run of trying to build a sustainable model where we were educating those folks through the mobile phone. We came up with a lot of content. And you know, the mobile phones, number one, number two use in Africa, I don't remember which it is, but it's pornography and gambling. So, you know, you go in the darkest places and everyone's walking around with these smartphones. So they have access to the technology, but the things they're using it for is not good. And so that was my dream. But painfully, about a year ago, I decided to close down that effort. I haven't figured out how to reposition. I still have a desire to do that. It's probably been just time and intersection with those people and resources, but we couldn't find a sustainable position. So my hope was I was funding everything and I was happy doing that. But at some point it had to be a sustainable organization. And we just couldn't find that. And we also found that this was a great delivery tool, but we couldn't quite get them to use it without assistance. And so we had to, you know, when we were on the ground working with them, it was effective, but couldn't quite get to where I wanted to get it. So, you know, politics, no, Lighthouse, okay, Mom, I'll go do that. That goes wild, does really great. My Dream, which I think is God ordained, so I'm quite figured that out, but that was hard. I haven't had to make those kinds of decisions, fortunately, in my life too many times where I give up on a dream. You know, I have it right here. You know, I had on my desk, Dream, and it says, Dan's BHAG changed the lives of 1 billion people at the bottom of the pyramid, or the economically disadvantaged, I changed that, through the delivery of transformational knowledge via mobile technologies by 2035.
Dan.
So that was my BHAG on it, but...
I love it. Dan, we need to put that BHAG in the show notes, and Jeff, we need to set up a group meeting of all the podcasts participants in Santo Domingo. Dan, you and I, we need to like dig deep in this BHAG. We got to figure this out. Like,
yeah,
it's not the end of the story hasn't been written yet.
So back to my mission to scale Kingdom Enterprises. So what I realized was starting an organization like that in the DR with me being here in the US, even mm-hmm. though I felt like I had a pretty decent team down, I had a very good team.
Mm-hmm.
But I just realized, you know, I think I would be better off finding someone who's already in that kind of area and doing those things. And then through my funding and my expertise, helping them. So that's what we have to pray for, is that I intersect with someone already kind of in the game, and that we can help that.
We need to talk.
I think there's a great lesson in this, which, you know, we always try to illustrate some setbacks in this podcast because, you know, nobody's experience is up and to the right. And if you're not in a little bit of a setback, one's coming. I mean, unfortunately, that's just the way life works. And so, but I think
it's so encouraging, Jeff.
I mean, but God's plan gets achieved. It's just never in a straight line, you know,
exactly.
And with this help, we get through those dips. But I think it's important to, when God puts something on your heart, you know, and it doesn't happen exactly the way you've been pretty successful, even with the ups and downs of the business that worked. Okay. You jump into Lighthouse Works. Well, that takes off. Well, I guess everything I touch is going to turn to gold. And then it doesn't right away. But I think that's important that, I mean, you still have it written down, and I have a feeling it will be fulfilled some way. But we just don't know. So you wake up and take instructions, you know, and Jeff's already putting it together in another event for you. So, I mean, help apparently is on the way. So anyway, so what else is on the list of scale things? I know you've been involved with Mission Increase and some other things.
So I'd like to pause right here. I know we're going to come back to like best ideas or one idea. But Dan, I would really love to hear what your advice is. You've been super successful and you're so mission minded. What advice would you give to other business owners who are interested in incorporating generosity or just that generosity mindset, but they're not sure where to start? Like, what do you think about as you've obviously run into, participated with, or gotten to know a lot of other successful businessmen and women who maybe are at a different place on this journey, but what advice would you have for them?
Yeah, well, I don't know if you're going to want to put this in the podcast. I have a joke phrase like, bad breath is better than no breath. Meaning like, even if you don't know exactly what to do, do something.
Mm.
So, you know, Loy talks about low-cost probes. And so you just have to get out. And I think people get paralyzed with, like, oh, I've got to give a bunch of money before, you know, these folks will talk to me. I take the opposite approach. Mm-hmm. I'll donate enough money to an organization I'm interested in to support them, but also enough above the radar that, you know, we'll have a conversation and typically do that over a period of time. So like for me right now, I have a distinct interest in what's going on with pro-life, but how it is with the internet. So, you know, with the old days, an abortive-minded woman would drive to a local clinic. Now they're going on their mobile phone. Mm-hmm. And what's happening is Planned Parenthood, I might not be correct on the exact number, but it's like $88 million a year they spend on the internet.
Mm-hmm.
And our pro-life, we're not organized around that. Mm-hmm. So I have a really, because I saw this in education. So I have a very distinct understanding of how all that works. And how maybe a collaborative kind of effort would make a big deal. So I've been on the phone doing low-cost probes, talking to people, kind of seeding some things just to educate myself. So I feel this tug from God to start thinking about this. And so I would say just go do that. And the other thing is I have a fundamental belief that all of us are the best at something in the world. And everyone, you got to spend the time to figure out what that is. But we all have unique gifts and talents. God gave us talents. Mm-hmm. And just find out what's the right way that you can help. And don't get hung. I think people get, and I'll admit, I get paralyzed at times on charitable giving as well. Because if you take that serious, you know, you really want to make sure you're doing a good job of stewarding those funds. But I'll admit, I get a little bit I can overanalyze. So, you know, I've got to be a little bit more faithful with God at times with his hand and all this and doing that. But the, you know, it's kind of interesting. They talk about sports stars who aren't really great coaches because things come so natural to them. Mm. I was blessed with this gift where, you know, I'll shop for $1,000 TV. I'll spend 10 hours getting the best deal on that. But I'll write a really big charitable gift without hesitation when I'm just feeling like this is the right thing to do. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah.
You know, I don't struggle with giving away money. I struggle with how to deploy it. But once that's all settled, there's no hand cramp.
That's great advice. And not only are we going to put that into podcast, we might call the title of the podcast, Bad Breath is Better Than No Breath. I like it. It's going to be up to Jeff for the final editing. But no, yeah, such good advice.
That is actually probably good. I'm not the marketing guy. But. Let me ask you this. One of the things we always love to do is sort of tease out these consistent things, which is, I think, what you're saying, which is, Halftime does an amazing job of this, of saying, you know, I mean, look, man, your dad's an optometrist. You're grinding lenses in your bedroom at 14. Okay. I mean, that's electrical engineer. Okay. So you're organized. You know, you told the pizza story where you need to be close to the customer. That sort of fits with a practical mind and seeing results. And then, by the way, was the business compass knowledge? Did you start that from scratch, or did somebody already have the seed of an idea and you scaled it?
That's a great question. So I was partnered with a guy who was a crazy idea guy.
And
in every business, there's 10 steps. Step one is you start. Step 10 is either bankrupt it or sell it. I was 2 through 9.
Right.
Different businesses. And one of the businesses had a relationship with University of Florida, but it was sort of a book publishing business. It wasn't a distance learning or distance education business necessarily. So We kind of threw that morphed over time, and
So that makes sense. Again, that kind of, I think, unpacks for all of us listening to your story the, you know, where you throw fire on something. You said it. Look, I'm not necessarily the startup guy.
Yep.
I'm the scale guy.
That's right.
Which is a very unique talent, you know, and you know, something we're working on. You know, we're trying to scale, but there's new things you got to learn along the way. That takes a special set of skills to. Scale something and learn new skills. And that's what, so I just think part of what I hear you saying is for the listener, look at your history, where you've had success, what are the gifts God's given you, and start applying those. Is that a fair characterization?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So a mission increase on there. Do you want to tell that story or any other sort of stories in the nonprofit world that you've been involved in and kind of trying to help grow?
Yeah. So, you know, I've been involved with the Mission Increase. You know, we were, you know, as I mentioned to you when we were on before, that we're moving now to be a little bit more cause focused, where we're trying to get organizations to work together to solve specific problems. You know, I've been involved with Man in the Mirror and helping them go through the transition of their founder is, you know, kind of not retiring, but you know, is kind of winding down his leadership, and they got another leadership coming in. So I've worked with a number of organizations like that, and they're again just bringing business processes and accountability and whatnot. Even like with Esperanza, I hired a business consultant out of Mexico for a year to come and coach them through a business process called scaling up. Mm-hmm. I hired their the lady who now runs that organization, I actually funded her first year because they didn't think they needed an HR person. And I said, you need an HR person. I'll pay for the first year. And sure enough, they brought her in to run HR for a year. And that's how, you know, that, you know, so those are the kinds of things that I think I have the ability to see the needs in an organization. And then I typically fund very specific things where I see those kinds of needs. And the same with Man in the Mirror. I funded a consultant out of Texas to come in and work with them to put together their processes and whatnot. So I've done that with a number of different organizations.
I just love that. It's just it sounds so logical when you say it, that you have those skills. That's where you were most successful in business. You're applying those to the nonprofit world. But I think it's not as easy when you operate in your strength to identify what those things are and how to apply them in those places. So you think that's more of a team sport to have other people around you that can kind of tease that out?
Yeah, maybe. I jokingly say I split my time in thirds after I sold that business. First third for Jackie and the kids. Second third is the redeployment of the capital that I made. So we have a very diverse portfolio. Last third is for philanthropic. I don't really, when I look at investment, when I look at deals and businesses and whatnot, when I look at the kingdom work, those aren't really that different. I mean, I use the same skills to figure out, I feel a very strong commitment to get a great return on God's investment in me. So I really, really work hard to make sure we're doing the best we can in that.
Well, this has just been amazing. And I mean, Jeff kind of already took you down this road, but we'll give you a second bite at the apple here on just very high level, ground level, but just the most practical tip that you could deliver to somebody behind you on the journey that's trying to, you know, integrate their business or after the sale or whatever it is. But
I have a couple tips. I can't give you this one. I got a couple. So first of all, plan as much as you can before the transition. You usually, you know, retirement, so for some, it happens suddenly. Usually you see that coming. It's largely age or business related or whatnot, but plan before you get. Be very, very careful not to get sloppy busy. So what happens, where if you've been a successful business owner, entrepreneur, or an executive, you're sort of hooked to the adrenaline of being busy. So you can get sloppy busy, and I'm guilty of this. So you have to be careful not to get sloppy busy. Don't overcomplicate your life. And I think the most important piece of advice that I can give, and I've been thinking a lot about this, you spend your whole life and career seeking to get to a place of comfort. You struggle and you want to be comfortable. You want to get to comfortable. But the bottom line is nothing really great comes out of comfort. Wow. And so you have to always be pushing yourself into discomfort in order to really, I think, make a big kingdom impact. You know, if you just focus on comfort, maybe that's equated to a comfortable retirement. You know, that's not, I mean, you know, the Bible's got a bunch of examples where that's just not the way to go. So that, and even now I fight with that because I've worked hard to become financially independent and create comfort for my family and security, but that's not where you want to rest. It's okay to go back into that to recharge, but you've got to push yourself to be uncomfortable because that's where the greatness comes.
Jeff Rudd, I'm going to propose that as the title. Nothing really great comes out of comfort.
There you go. Love it.
That's a home run, underline, highlight. That's fantastic. Because you know what I love about that? It's the opposite of what the world says.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, everybody, you fight. That's exactly what everyone's trying to do, is create this comfort. And there are, God wants us to be, I don't think there's anything wrong with that. But the problem is when you get the comfort and you stay in comfort,
He gives us all things to enjoy, but he also commands us to be generous. You can't just focus on the comfort or else you're not going to be satisfied. So well, I think you just nailed it. Well, Dan, can't thank you enough for being with us. Jeff, thank you also.
My privilege.
Yeah, thank you, Dan. This has been awesome. Great advice.
Thank you to all the listeners for joining us this week on the Generous Business Owner Podcast. Check us out on YouTube and on generousbusinessowner.com and sign up for the newsletter and share this podcast with a friend who you think it would help. Thanks, everybody.
Thanks for listening to the Generous Business Owner Podcast with Jeff Thomas, Alan Barnhart, and Jeff Rutt. Make sure to follow the podcast so you don't miss an episode. You can find the guest contact information in the show notes. Stay tuned for the next episode.